Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. Ryan Balaji, good to have you here with us. After a week of travel, which is kind of the point of this episode of the show, you can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Balaji. Get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. I'm back on Instagram here and there, occasionally posting at Ryan Balaji as well. You kind of get the pattern. It's either Ryan Balaji or Golf News Net. Take a crack. I mean, it's going to be one of those two. And then download our apps for Roku and Amazon Fire TV. We are presented by our friends at 2Under. 2Under makes the absolute best underwear for golf, for business, for the gym, for your life. They make it. They make a bunch of different kinds of underwear for specific purposes, and all of these different types of underwear are structured to make sure you get the most out of doing those things, including, again, going to play on the golf course, going to the gym and working out, for your daily wear around the office or your home, and even at night. Make sure you get the best possible sleep. Some of the great features that our friends at 2Under have in their underwear, the Joey Pouch that keeps your boys separated from the rest of your body, so you keep them nice and dry, especially when you're at the gym or when you're walking on the golf course. Hopefully you're walking on the golf course. And then the no drip tip means that when you're done, nothing ever shines through to get onto your regular clothes, which if you've ever been to a golf course, you know the very pain of that subject. So head over to 2under.com, the number 2UNDR.com. Use the promo code GNN20. You're going to save 20% on your order, whatever it is that you order, however many times that you order, not just your first order, but every order, with a promo code GNN20. And we're going to be hitting that hard a little bit around the holidays, too, because we know so many of you are looking for good, quick gifts for people in your life. And 2Under not only makes great underwear, they also make duffel bag, great loungewear, socks, a variety of products that you can check out. So 2under.com for that. So this episode is about my recent travels, which is why we didn't do a show last week, in part because I was in Mexico. And I was in Mexico at a time when I probably should have researched this before we went. A cyclone slash hurricane was hitting the opposite side of where we were and knocked out meaningful internet at the resort we were staying at, which I'll get into all of that in a minute. But that's why we didn't do the podcast. But the story of this trip starts before we get into Mexico. So I was originally going to go out to Los Angeles in a couple of weeks. Not this week, but next. And I was going to go out there with my friends Josh Jacob and Kevin Frisch. Kevin had just turned 50 earlier in the summer. And we were going to celebrate his 50th birthday by going around and playing a bunch of great clubs in Los Angeles. It's going to be a great time. Mini stag party. We did this a couple of years ago up in Michigan. Had an absolute blast and vowed to do it again. And unfortunately, my wife committed to a work trip that weekend. That week. So I couldn't do it. And that's just the reality of it. And I had to be home with the kids. So instead, I was given an opportunity by the folks at Hunter Public Relations. Great fun, great people. Been on different events with them in the past, but never done a trip with them. And they asked if I would be interested in going to the Villas de Palomar in Laredo, Mexico. And I have not been to Mexico since I had my honeymoon a little bit more than 8 years ago now. And I had let my passport lapse because I hadn't used it since before my son was conceived, almost 6 years ago. And so I said to my wife, you know what, I need to get my passport renewed. This will give me an excuse to do that. Go take a media trip. And that way I could do it, still get some kind of excursion out to Los Angeles because we'd be flying out there beforehand, and then go into Mexico, come back, weekend trip, long weekend trip over Columbus Day weekend, and then, you know, just be fine. That'd be it. So it turned out that the trip was actually the next week. So it wasn't Columbus Day weekend. It was the weekend after Columbus Day weekend. But got everything set up and had a flight out to Los Angeles scheduled. And when I decided to do the flight, I wanted to make sure that I could spend one day in Los Angeles. I wanted to hang out with Josh and just do LA, you know, whatever it was, whether it was hitting up food, whether it was doing touristy things, even though I don't like that, whether it was going to Santa Monica, whatever it was. And so we kind of blocked off that date, that Wednesday, and I flew in. But on the Monday, of that week, he calls me and asks, what do you want to do? And I said, well, we can do anything. I don't care what we do. We can drink all day. We can play golf. We can go see the sights. And he asked if I wanted to play golf. And I said, sure, I have my clubs and bring them to Mexico. So, that would be fine. And he asks, do you want to play Riviera? Well, I love Josh, but that's a dumb question. Of course, I want to play Riviera. And so he says, okay, well, let me make a couple phone calls, give you a call back. 30 minutes later, we have a tea time at Riviera Country Club. The Riviera Country Club, because that's what the actual name of it is. Not trying to be obscene. It's actually called the Riviera Country Club. And really excited about it. We're going to play with a member who's a friend of Josh's, who's been asking him to play for a while. And it's going to work out great. Everyone's going to love it. And so we go ahead and I make the trip out. I hop on a plane at 7 a.m. on 7 a.m. on a Wednesday and make the fly out to Los Angeles. Get there 9:30 local time. So it was a quick 5-hour flight. So get out there and Josh picks me up and we have a little bit of lunch and we go out to Riviera. I've never been to Riviera. I've never covered the tournament. I've never covered the PGA Tour event, now known as the Genesis Open. And I've seen it on TV year after year after year. I want to go, want to check it out. But it's kind of hard to justify going to a regular PGA Tour event in Los Angeles. It just is. I mean, it's a great tournament. It's well-respected. But it costs a lot of money to go cover a PGA Tour event, especially when you're flying across the country and you're in Los Angeles, which is a very expensive hotel market. So you're probably going to pay in the area of $200 per night for a decent hotel. So all of a sudden you are in for like $2,000 before you do a single thing. And that includes you have to eat, you have to drink, and you probably got some other stuff you're going to do. You got to get around. So you're in for like $2,500 to go cover a PGA Tour event in Los Angeles. That's why I've never done it. And so we get in to the club, we go, I mean, here's the remarkable thing about Riviera. And frankly, the West Side 6. So there are 6 major golf clubs in the west portion of Los Angeles, and they're all very, very close to each other. Among those, Riviera, obviously, Brentwood, Los Angeles Country Club, Hillcrest, which is now a host of the LPGA Tour's new event out there. It looked awesome on TV. I would love to go play it someday. A couple of others that you're not as familiar with, and frankly, neither was I. They're all equity clubs, and they're all about $250,000 to get into. And they're all so close to one another. And Josh kind of drove me around before we got to the gates at Riviera, showed me around a number of them, at least the entrances to them. Obviously, we're not going in them, but showed me around a bunch of them. And I mean, these places are 100, 200 acres of land that are easily worth $1 billion. And that if they were developed, they would be worth, they would fetch that, right? And that's kind of scary. I mean, even though land values are ridiculous here in the D.C. area, I don't think of it in those terms. I don't think of our country club is worth billions of dollars, maybe $100 million, $200 million, I don't know, but billions? No, definitely not. So we go around this Pacific Palisades neighborhood, this part of Los Angeles, which is technically, I guess, its own self, but it's really part of Los Angeles. And these houses are fascinating. I mean, it's all kinds of different types of architecture. There's kind of Mediterranean style. There's more traditional California. There's even some East Coast influences in it. Little bit of everything, and all of the houses are at least $5 million. I mean, if you're over near Riviera, you're paying top dollar for this kind of space, for this kind of access. And we kind of weave our way around this neighborhood and check out a lot of the houses, and in a somewhat nondescript way, you just kind of happen on the Riviera Country Club. And there's a gate, there's a watch station for someone who could be on the outside of the gate checking cars and stuff. There's a call button, and there's a sign. And it's, I mean, for a club that famous, relatively nondescript. You wouldn't know where it is unless you know where it is. And hit the call button, say, hey, we're playing today with a member. They let us in, do the valet, take the clubs out, head down to the locker room, kind of get ready, get changed. The locker room at Riviera is not the greatest locker room in the world. I mean, it's very, very nice. But it's not the greatest, not the most luxurious. I mean, there are others I've been in, both modern and less modern, that are a little bit more luxurious. But if you want luxury, you go to Caves Valley in Maryland. You go to even Bella Colina in Florida, which is absurd in terms of how nice it is. And it's public access, by the way. You can go play it. But We go in the locker room, there's just tons of history everywhere. There's a room called the Signature Room, where it has just signatures of players who've won the Los Angeles Open or other big professional tournaments there over the years. They've got different imagery plastered all over the main floor of the clubhouse itself for the majors they've hosted. So the times that Ben Hogan and Steve Elkington have won majors there, they have those things right there. It was pretty cool. And then you kind of have all these other tchotchkes throughout the main hall portion of the locker room, honoring former members, former caddies, former pros, all kinds of different people, caricatures, pictures, different ways of honoring these people. It was cool to see the history of the club and through that prism. So we change, and we go on out, and we start doing our putting. We're not allowed to go down to the range until the member shows up. And a woman shows up, probably 10 years younger than I am, probably 25, 27 years old she looked. And she came up to Josh and I asked if we were her guests. It's like, no, we're not. I mean, we would love to be another day, but we are not your guests. I thought that was kind of funny. It was kind of clued me into maybe some of the culture of the club that there are some days where you have third and fourth party guests showing up and you have a member who's coming in for the day has no earthly clue who these people are, who's going to play with them. And either they're paid up in front or however it works. And so we're having a putting contest, and there are two different putting greens right outside the pro shop. They're a little bit behind the first tee and 10th tee, kind of centrally located up on top of that hill. Great little spot. They actually have a hotel, by the way. Hotel rooms in the Riviera Country Club clubhouse. And they're pretty reasonable from what I understand. So if you want to go to Riviera, if you want to find a way to sneak around in there, get married there. You can get married at Riviera. Publicly allowed to do it. You can have your wedding reception there or your whole thing there. Then you can stay there for the night with the hotel, maybe weasel your way into a round on the golf course. So if you're about to get married for the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth time, 10th time, if you're Larry King again, whatever it is, do that. Check that out. Might be a cool opportunity. And actually, that goes not only for Riviera. That goes for a lot of country clubs. There are a lot of places that will have public weddings at their private facility, and it might get you away to get on the golf course. So something to think about for the future if you're thinking about getting married. But we kind of do the putting drills, and the member, Pat, shows up. And we go on the driving range, and the driving range of Riviera is nice. I mean, it's a nice short game facility. It's not the most amazing thing you've ever seen, in part because it's kind of fenced in. I mean, the reality is the second tee is to the second hole runs up the left side of the driving range, and then to the right is part of the 10th hole, the back end of the 10th hole, but really the 11th hole runs that line of the range. So you're kind of surrounded by the golf hole, so it doesn't feel like it's its own separate world. Kind of like Shinnecock, to be honest. I mean, these older facilities were found in the 20s or before then. They didn't really think about the driving range as a key component, and they built their entire reputation and membership not around their driving range or practice facility, but around the golf course. So the practice facility, as it changed over time, as golf technology got better, and you could hit the ball farther and straighter, then these things took on less meaning, but you still needed more space for them so people could hit full shots. So they're not an afterthought, but they're not as important. And we get up to the first tee, and here's the unique thing about Riviera. They introduce guests on the first tee. Not necessarily every member, but members playing with a guest and guests get an introduction from the golf staff. So they ask for the pronunciation of your name and whether you have a gallery or not, whether you just it's just a caddy that you're mandated to have as a guest, you and your playing partners, whoever it is, when you tee off on that first hole, it tees off from the clubhouse area, like right next to the clubhouse, and then down into the valley where you play almost all the entire golf course. It's a weird feeling. I mean, I've only been introduced on a tee a few times in my life by an actual person, not jest, but when I was in the U.S. Open local qualifier in 2012, which I absolutely bombed. I think I may have been introduced in a pro-am on the Champions Tour in 2011. I was trying to remember that, but I don't recall that. So that may not actually be true. That's why I didn't include it in the story. I wrote about this experience for the website. But it was kind of cool, but very, very strange. Did not expect it. So as you probably know, if you know Riviera from watching on TV, you know the first hole is a par 5. That's really a par 4 that plays downhill about 500 yards from the tips. We didn't get the tips. We got the non-tips, which was like 485 down the hill. And I hit three wood to about 175. And I did that not because I was cocky and thought I could hit three wood forever. Three wood's kind of uncomfortable for me. But the drive zone for my driver would have been basically the Branca that runs through the first hole, the second hole, 11, 13, 8, 9, I guess, in parts. But 5 or 6 holes where it comes into play when you could see it. So you have to avoid that. So you're trying to lay back a little bit. So I didn't hit driver. Hit an 8 iron in. With my second shot, we had a lot of wind that day. A lot of the big helping breeze off the first tee. And so hit driver 8 iron on a par 5. Went long a little bit, made 5. In part because I didn't know how much the Kikuyu grass would grab. I'd never really played on Kikuyu grass before. So that was something to learn about. And then obviously Poa greens, which I've played before. That's not a big deal. So make a par on the first and then get to the second hole. It's the direct opposite. Honestly, the second hole should be the par 5. You're playing basically the same length hole, 460 or so, and you're playing it into the wind. I crush a drive, leave 205 left, and just, I have no idea what to do. I'm trying to hit a punch cut, and that just failed miserably. And so from there, we go on the round, and the one thing I learned really quickly about Riviera is you have to play with a game plan. You have to understand how to play your game at that golf course. Otherwise, you're just going to get beat up. I shot 83 overall. I could have easily shot in the high 70s if I knew when to hit driver and knew when not to hit driver. It's pretty apparent not to hit driver on the first hole. It was pretty apparent to hit driver on the second hole. But not on the third hole, not on the fifth hole, not on the sixth hole. Well, sixth hole was the primary. Third hole, fifth hole, a couple of others around the golf course. You're like, should I hit driver? Should I not? Do I need to? And my tendency is to hit driver. I want to hit driver when I play golf. It's just fun, more fun for me. I hit it a long way. I want to hit it a long way. And a couple of times it got me into a position where I hit it too far. Too good, too far. Wound up in foot-high Kikuyu grass. Wasn't going to be able to advance it very far. Just lost the ball outright. So I made some dumb mistakes in that regard. I did it again in a couple holes in the back where I hit it just a little too far. And it set myself up, not necessarily in the deepest rough, but in rough where it might prop it up, and you might figure, well, it's going to fly because it's propped up, but because of the nature of Kikuyu or Bermuda-like grass, it can ride up the face and then just shoot it straight up in the air, and you get absolutely nothing out of it. So I did that a few different times, and that cost me strokes. I could have just taken an extra club, and it would have been fine. Or if I'd taken less off the tee and left more from the fairway, maybe that's a better play. So, I of course, this is not a place I'm thinking about like playing next week. Maybe if I ever get to play it again, while I'm still a fairly able-bodied, fairly powerful golfer, I'll still do the same kinds of things I did from post-tee shot onward, but I won't be hitting the same kind of shots off the tee. But the big takeaway for me, so I did two things really, really well. I hit two iron really well throughout the day, and I reached the 11th hole, which is about a 580-yard par 5 in two. I hit about a 340-yard drive, and a 245-yard or so second shot just to the collar of the green. And I was so proud of that. I mean, that was a huge thing for me. I don't normally pull those two shots together really well. I mean, I hit reach par fives in two. Usually when I'm left with, like, driver mid-iron, driver five-iron, not driver two-iron. So I was really proud of that. But the one big takeaway, well, two big takeaways about the golf course, other than having a plan, is that the set of par threes is some of the, it's probably one of the best I've ever played. Pasa Tiempo is up there. Probably my number one that I've played in terms of the quality of par threes. But the ones at Riviera are fantastic. I mean, six, you know. It's got the center bunker. Creates basically four quadrants. Runs back to front. It's a great hole. Great hole. Made par. Should have made birdie. Just didn't hit it hard enough to get in the hole in that birdie putt. And even four, which we kind of skipped over because we were talking about course management. It played 230. Played 230. It was probably about 220. Probably played a little bit more than that. So probably played close to 250. And you kind of have to sling it in from the right to get the maximum benefit. Or you can just try to carry it all if you're playing from an up tee. And we was playing into like a 15-20 mile per hour wind. And I just did not hit it very well. but really good long par three that if you hit the proper shot, you're going to get a feed and a good chance at making a birdie. Then we did, obviously, six, and then cleared out the front nine. We played 10. Should talk about 10. We'll come back to that in a minute. Then we played 14. 14 was probably my tie for third favorite par three, and it was a really good one. Big green, 200-yard shot. It's 185 in. Wind was in, playing 200. Just big green, slants from right to left. Maybe a little back to front, but not really. But the really interesting thing about the hole is these intimidating, huge, deep bunkers. That was one of the renovations done at the club in the recent years. Restore the depth of the bunkers. So when you got in them, and you were really hitting a penalty shot. You kind of really had to execute. You couldn't just dribble it out and then maybe still save par. You really had to hit a good shot. But on the tee, it was intimidating because even though you knew there was a fairly large putting surface there, not only were you playing into the wind, but you knew when all the problems were going to be based on the bunkering. You knew it would be trouble, especially if you flared it right, which Josh did, or if you went way left, like Pat did, you knew you were in trouble. You knew it wasn't going to be easy. And fortunately, I hit the green and made par. But the other back nine par three is 16, which is the one you probably see on TV a lot. Remember, other than six, because it's the par three hole that has the car behind it usually. That's usually the giveaway hole. We've seen holes in one over the years there on television. It's much more strategic than you think on the tee the first time you play it. I mean, it looks like a 8-iron, 7-iron in there from the tee box that we played, and it looks pretty straightforward. Just hit it to the center of the green and you'll be fine. And generally speaking, that's right on pretty much every shot on the planet. But you had a big slope back left. You could play off of that if you wanted to cut it in there. You had a variety of different options once you kind of got to the green. And the cool thing about 16 as well that you'll never see on TV, I don't think, is that there is a secondary green, not only on 16, there's also one on 10 that most people don't talk about, but is actually used. They're used regularly by the club. They're smaller surfaces, but they have a couple of different pin positions on them to just kind of give greens a rest, for example. And they're really cool. I mean, they're really cool. Look, I wish I had taken a picture of the one on 16. My camera died before I was able to do that. So I really love the par 3s. I loved playing 10. 10 was 315, 310 into a flattish wind. I mean, a little bit in your face, but not much. And the statistics say on the PGA Tour, obviously I'm not a PGA Tour player, but the statistics say you should hit iron, or you should at least lay up. You should lay up to about 60 yards, hit it just over one of the bunkers guarding the left side of the fairway to the right side of the fairway, and then hit your wedge in and make your birdie or par. That's the best way to get to the hole. And Pat did just that. Hit it to about 2 feet and made birdie. Not me, though. I'm an idiot. So I decided I'm going to hit driver. I've been hitting driver well all day. I'm going to do it. So I hit driver, and it was long enough. Unfortunately, it wasn't straight enough. It went left. I mean, way left. I think it hit a car path a little bit, but I can't tell. And it goes just in front of the forward tee on 11. So, I mean, it was long enough. It was actually probably longer than it needed to be. But I had no wedge game that day, and I had a case of the Hanksays, and I just could not hit a proper wedge shot that day. And so I made bogey there, and that was probably my only real regret of the round, was that I didn't hit a good shot there. I didn't play that hole as I knew I should have statistically, and as I know I could have ability-wise. 11 was a great makeup. I'm very happy with that. And I feel like I played a number of the other holes in the golf course really, really well. Just a bunch of them were strategic errors that I probably could have avoided in a second round there or third round there. You know, if you were a regular member, you would know what to do. And so I kind of made a variety of mistakes that were, some were forced, I mean, or unforced, some were just dumb, and some were strategic. But it was an incredible golf course. So well done. George C. Thomas is the man. I mean, he basically is the man of L.A. golf. He also did L.A. Country Club North, which was just restored by Gil Hance a couple of years ago. He's going to host the U.S. Open in a few years. And I cannot wait to see how that holds up, too. Someday, I'm going to get to play L.A. Country Club, I hope, before I walk away from doing this job and doing golf for a living and just going back to being a normal golfer. But for now, Riviera is up there with some of the greatest courses I've ever had the good fortune of playing. I mean, this has been an incredible year of being able to play some cool places. The last several years have been incredible. I knocked Oakmont off the list in 2016. I played Riviera and Shinnecock this year, which is unbelievably cool. Unbelievably cool. I've played Pinehurst. I've played Crystal Downs. I mean, there's so many other great places that you could hypothetically knock off a list. And I'm sure I could spend the rest of my life, and probably will, trying to see these places just once. But days like this were special. They are always are special. Not necessarily because of the golf. I mean, you're going to hit some good shots, you're going to hit some bad shots. And I've had good rounds on really good courses, and I've had bad rounds on really good courses. I've had mediocre rounds on really good courses. And I will always remember those rounds because of the people I was with that day. They may not have been my best friends. They may have been complete strangers. They may have been good friends or getting better friends or whatever. It didn't matter. But I enjoyed the company a lot. And in part, I think that's because so many people show up to those types of days where you're a guest or you get lucky, you win a draw, you win a lottery, a media lottery, some kind of other thing. You feel so grateful just to be there. So you kind of shed all the baggage. You shed all the problems. You shed all your stresses and cares and worries. And for those 4, 5, 6 hours, 7 hours that you're at the club, you're at this place, this special place, for whatever reason, it's special to you. You can just enjoy the golf for what it is, whatever the result, and the people. And so when I think about this round, I'm going to think about Josh and Pat. Pat was a damn machine, man. He was used to be a +3 golfer earlier in his life. I think he's in his 70s. Still teaches golf. And he's been a member at Riviera for something like, I think he said 37 years. And he just hit the ball straight every shot. I mean, he had a lot of good shots and made a lot of good putts. And it never felt like he was out of control. It was a kind of golf to emulate. And he had a demeanor to emulate, too. Just a nice man, happy, grateful to be where he is in life. And to be able to share this day and let us come to his property, come to his club, and revel in it. And Josh was great as well. I mean, he's a competitive golfer, but he's a really good guy. He's very driven. He has an understanding of a lot of things. He gets things quickly, which makes him really fun to talk to. And he's also a good golfer, so it makes fun competition as well. We had a little 5-hole match to close everything out, and I lost one down. But I did win the putting contest, so technically we were even on the day on competitions. And I remember that, and I will remember that. I remember the foursome that I played with at Oakmont. I don't remember the entire foursome I played with at Pinehurst, but I remember playing with Don Padgett, and Willie was my caddy. And, I mean, that's unbelievably cool to have played with those guys that day. And there are other times when I've gone to Caves Valley and played with Brendan Porath and Kevin Van Valkenburg, and we had so much fun that day. KVV was getting ready to take it deep, a couple under early on in the round. It didn't work out that way, but he played great. And that was really fun company, too. I remember my best round because of the company. I know what some of the greatest scores I've ever shot are. I can tell you what the numbers are. But I don't remember every shot. I remember the company. Or when I play by myself, I kind of remember the fist pumps to myself. Those have happened, too. And this was one of those days. And I know these are the types of things you just don't get an opportunity to do very often. You kind of have to know somebody who knows somebody to make them happen, or otherwise they feel kind of commonplace. And I think that's also something I really like about these kinds of things. I am a very much middle-class guy. No matter what happens to me for the rest of my life, I will always likely be a middle-class guy at heart. That's not going to change. No matter how much GNN succeeds or fails or whatever, I'm going to always be a middle-class guy through and through. And so for me, it feels like these places are unattainable, that I need help to get to them. And that's in part because I do. But I also feel that when those things kind of come together, they're just a special opportunity. And you get a glimpse, in some sense, into a world you probably not, at least I don't feel really comfortable being in. It's just not who I am. I don't know. I know how to dress like a golfer. I know how to act like a golfer. I know how to act like a successful business person. I know how to do those things. But that's not who I am. I mean, I'm a athletic shorts and t-shirt and flip-flops kind of guy. I love quarter zips because they keep me warm. I would rather wear a sweatshirt. It's just who I am. And while I love golf and I love seeing people have a great time, and I love being able to compete and show off what I can do here and there. Going to places like this still feels like I'm out of place, even though I work in the industry and have the good fortune to be able to do this for my job. And it's just, I appreciate days like this. So it was really cool to go play Riviera. And we went afterwards, kind of down the street a little bit, and got some awesome chicken baskets in the Brentwood at Country Market area, which was pretty cool. So check that out if you're ever in the Los Angeles area. The thing I liked about what Josh did that day was he gave me the option of, hey, you want to do something fancy or you want to do something that it's kind of the commoner people, the smart people in LA go and do as natives to avoid the tourist traps. And we did those things, and they were delicious. And that's how I love to experience places, is I want to do what the normal person does, the person who lives here. What do they do? What's good food to them? What do they avoid because it's a tourist trap, or it's not as good as everyone thinks it is, or is built up to be? What are the institutions that the average person who lives in this town, lives there every day, goes to? And that's what Josh did, which was pretty sweet. So I didn't realize I was going to spend 31 or so minutes talking about a round at Riviera Country Club. I honestly thought I was going to talk about it for maybe 15 or 20 minutes or so, and then get into TPC at Danzante Bay in Mexico and that whole trip. But I will save that for another podcast, because for as much as I love talking, you hearing me talking about golf, for me playing golf, not even other people playing golf that we all saw together for an hour, just does not sound like the best experience in the world. So I'm going to save that for another podcast. We'll talk about that for another 35 or 40 minutes or so next episode, and we'll go from there so I can share that trip. Because it was, this was one of the better golf excursions of my life, and I've had some pretty great ones in the last handful of years, last 7 years really. But this was a pretty special one too. And in a way, and somewhat in ways I didn't expect, but we'll talk about that a little bit in the next episode and give you the lowdown on the Villas de Palmar at TPC Danzante Bay at the Islands of Laredo. In the meantime, if you would like to see some pictures or a little bit of video footage from the round, the resort, time around there, you can follow me on Instagram. Like I said, I kind of brought it back from the dead. I never really was a big Instagram user to begin with, but this time of year, I don't really have a lot of better things to do because there's not a lot of golf going on that isn't in the middle of the night. So you can follow me on Instagram at Ryan Ballingy, or you can follow Golf News Net on Instagram at Golf News Net, and you can see some of the pictures and footage from there. We're going to put all that together into kind of like a 7, 8, 9 minute package, I think is how it's going to wind up looking, from the resort, and we'll do that, put that on YouTube and Roku TV and Amazon Fire and all that stuff in the coming week or so. So you can check that out too if you want to hold off, but we'll do a companion podcast for all of that. And I did one with our friend Bill Hobson from the Four Golfers Network, and he hosts Michigan Golf Live Television in the Fox Sports Central time zone. So he drops a podcast on that, I think, next week. So we'll talk, if you listen to his show, which you should, it's a good show, you can hear my perspective fresh from Mexico on that resort. And he uploaded the audio after the fact. It was a fun podcast with Glenn Perry and Jennifer Fast, who were Canadian Instagram influencers who were on the trip. And just as a way of preview of the next podcast, both of them from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, one of my favorite Canadian cities, one of the like five I visited. And Glenn had not played golf until last year for like 4 years. He played good golf in college, was a collegiate player, and had walked away from the game for all intents and purposes, and got back into it last year. And we played 3 rounds at TPC Danzante Bay in 3 days. And by the third round, we had both broken par. And I was super impressed with what he was able to do with rental sticks and having not played a whole lot of golf in the last handful of years of his life. It was really cool. So I'll talk about that in the next podcast. But anyhow, that'll do it for us on this edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. Thanks for indulging me as I talk about the Riviera Country Club. Always happy to get your emails. If you want to email me thoughts or questions, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm available there. You can also hit me up on Twitter, as always, at Ryan Ballingy. Until next time, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.